We're just okay and we play some movies. We're just okay.
Movie watchers.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Just Okay Movies. I'm your host, big old crybaby in the movie theater, Biggie Size. And I'm joined by...
Oh, boy. Now I can finally say I got the body of Thor, Guido.
Hey, Guido. How you doing, man?
Good. How are you?
I am doing very, very well. And... honestly, I think we should just jump straight into Endgame because I believe we have a lot to say, or at least I know I do.
Do you?
I do. I've got a lot to say about this film, and it comes from a very emotional place, honestly. That whole day, I saw it on Saturday at 7:30 in the morning. That was the best seats I could get for the 2D IMAX viewing, so I took it. And... from the first 5 minutes of the film, from that point onward, my eyes were not dry.
Just a blubbering mess of a man.
Oh my God. I was like even thinking back to it right now, I'm still a little, I don't know. It's like I'm carrying some sort of emotional baggage for a superhero franchise that before this point, I had no kind of emotional attachment to. There's just something about it. If you remember from our Infinity War discussion, I had mentioned at the end of that, I was in, not in tears, but very sad. And Guido, I know you said the same thing, you know, all that happened, you know, the good guys just got their asses kicked. And, you know, you really started realizing how tied you were to these characters and to see them go through a monumental loss and even them being very emotional about what had happened. It hit you right in the heart and it just hurt. And I did not think, honestly, that I could get back to that emotional state again because it's been, what, about a year, give or take. And... yeah. I just did not think a movie could get me back there, back to that point. But oh boy, they did it so subtly.
Right in the beginning too, when Hawkeye turns and very tastefully off screen, his family gets dusted.
Very, very tastefully. So well done. And oh man, it just, even thinking back on it, it was just chills because you just knew. You know, in that first scene, you just knew what was going to happen. And I even knew that she's going to go get the arrow and she's going to disappear. And sure enough, right when he looks over, you just see little flakes. And oh, my God.
I'm going to give you a little taste of. Well, I'm going to ruin the scene a little bit for you. OK, is that OK?
Yeah, sure. Go for it.
OK. I saw someone else mention this. I forgot where I saw it. But so they're fighting in Infinity War. They're fighting Thanos in Wakanda, right?
Right.
And it's in Africa, across the world. It's daytime when he snaps his fingers. Correct?
Yes, yes.
Smash cut to Hawkeye in the United States, and it's daytime?
Oh, that's it. Oh, come on.
Continuity, Marvel. Get it straight.
Oh, my God. Whatever. Are people really bitching about that?
No, no one's bitching about it. Okay. But you are going to watch it the second time, and you're going to be like, yeah, they kind of really should have covered this part. It's going to make you think.
You know what? That's fine. You know, Jesus Christ, I would have never even thought about that in a million years. But it was just so. I didn't really give a fuck about Hawkeye, but I think Jeremy Renner, I think that's his name, is just such a good actor that it hurts so bad. And I don't know. It still shakes me a little bit. But this whole film is just full of. I would almost say sadness or just a lot of heart and a lot of guilt. I mean, were you feeling the same way? Were you emotional through the film?
Yeah. But in the end, like I'm watching it. First of all, I'll tell you why I was emotional at the very start before the movie even started. And that's because I bought the 3D showing by mistake. So I was crying before the movie even started.
Oh, bless your heart, man.
Yeah, so I had to sit there with those glasses on, and 3D is such bullshit. I hate it. I almost didn't go see it, and I was like, we'll just wait a few days to go see it properly. I'll lose the money, and we'll just come back and see it. I'll pay twice. Fuck it. But we were there. Might as well watch it. So that's the only experience I have with this movie is watching it in shitty 3D.
Oh, goodness. Well, I can understand that.
But yeah, no, the movie had a lot of emotional hit, especially the first act of it, where it's pretty much everybody, they're showing everybody how they've come to terms with losing and living in this world where half the people that they love are gone. They had to do that. And I'm really glad they did the 5-year fast forward. Really glad. Yes. And the fact that they go right away to find Thanos and murder him is super cool.
Oh, yeah. So good. Oh, my God.
I was shocked.
Me too. No, I completely agree with you there. And I've heard people kind of bitch about that. And I don't understand, because it was the perfect setup. Because, as I said, trying to get back into that emotional state, what they had to do was, I mean, they kind of did the thing with Hawkeye, the show of him losing his family and then what he turns into. So we know what he's doing at this point. But then the next thing to do is exactly what we would do as people. We would go straight to that planet, wherever he is, and chop his fucking face off and try to turn around, because he's got the stones. He's gone. They must be there. We just go and snap our fingers and it's all done. You know, we've heard nothing but people saying, what about the Ant-Man trick where we put Ant-Man up his butthole and kill him? And that's how we get the Infinity Gauntlet and save the day. Well, they go there. He's just a broken guy because he destroyed the stones already. So we're like, that's it. Within 15, 20 minutes of the movie, we're fucked. There's no getting around this. And I agree. Then having the 5-year later gap and seeing what everyone's having to do to cope is powerful, and really gets you into that mindset that there's no coming back from this. This is a new normal that we have to get used to, and it just brings up all those feelings from the end of Infinity War. And I just, God, dude, I was at that point, I had tears going down my eyes. You know, I wasn't like, you know, heaving or making audible noises. That comes a little later. but at this point, yeah, you're just so sad. I think the part that hit me the hardest, definitely was Robert Downey Jr. with his little kid. I mean, those scenes were very powerful, because he's just, you know, he's a great actor. And it's a cute little kid. But the diner scene when they're talking with Bruce Banner, and, you know, he's talked about how he's become kind of one with the Hulk, and but still just in his voice, you just, whether if it's intentional or not, you kind of just get this guilt that's still there, that, you know, even though his life is probably better than it's ever been at this point, he still can't quite forgive himself or get over the fact that they failed. And that was truly just powerful. And all the Avengers feel that way. They just cannot get over it.
I have a little nitpick about the Thanos murder scene. How are we going to handle all these? I have nitpicks. It's a great movie. I enjoyed every second of it. But I do have slight nitpicks. And I don't want to overload it.
Sure.
So am I like allowed one for each scene that we discuss?
Dude, you could do whatever you want, man. Go for it.
This is Mickey doesn't give a shit anymore.
I'm phoning this one in. No, I'm gonna assume everyone who's listened to this has probably seen the movie, so didn't want to do a whole lot of back plot. It's a time travel film. They go and fight Thanos and win the day. That's basically it. Because that's not the core of the film. The core of the film is, I believe, the emotion, the character building, and the conclusion of all these characters. Not necessarily the plot itself, because it's fairly simplistic in nature. But yeah, go for it.
So my nitpick is they're talking to him, and Thanos is like, yo, I destroyed the stones, so they're gone. Do whatever. And then they all look to Nebula, and she's like, my father's many things, but he's not a liar. And I was watching it, and I was like, hold on. Like, they don't know who the fuck this girl is. Like, what are they taking Nebula for? Like, oh, so he's your father? So you could be in on it? Like, they have no idea who this lady is. She showed up with Tony Stark.
Yeah, but I mean, it's enough to say that Tony Stark trusts her, so they're going to trust her. I don't think that's too much of a stretch.
Yeah.
And the fact that he destroyed the stones, at that point, they understand why, you know, that big explosion happened. I think at that point, they have all the pieces together, and they know that they're screwed. Because there's really no... I mean, if he had the stones there, he'd probably just kill them again. You know, there's no real reason for him to hide them since he's all powerful and could just snap his fingers again. But that's what's also kind of cool about his character is he just had one goal. I mean, he could have just went ahead and wiped out the Avengers as well. And we see that he's got that kind of power because that's kind of how the thing concludes with Stark getting the gauntlet. But he didn't because that wasn't his goal. He already accomplished it, and he can die happy. And I like that. You know, there wasn't a subplot at this point.
Yeah. Yeah. What happened next? So they fast forward to 5 years, and Steve Rogers is leading a support group of a bunch of men.
Yeah, like I didn't understand that part.
Like a erectile dysfunction support group is what it felt like.
Well, that's the weird thing, because you see him and like three other people, and there's another guy there that was that Bruce Banner, or was that just some other guy that looked like him? Because then he's the Hulk later, so I didn't understand that.
Not Bruce Banner.
Okay. I just thought that was him for a second. I was like, is this a support group for like the Avengers? But I don't know who these other guys are. But yeah, it's just them talking about people they lost, and I guess he's leading it. But his only way to be like, I sympathize with you. I lost my girlfriend because I was frozen in water. Like, that's kind of weird, but I see your point.
And he's kind of going through, he's kind of catching up the audience of like, oh, they've accepted what has happened and they're trying to move forward. And they've given up trying to fix it. Until the MVP of the movie... according to the internet, a tiny little rat walks across a control panel inside of a van, and out pops Ant-Man, Scott Lang.
Right, that's right. Yeah, and then we have to kind of follow him. And I didn't see Ant-Man and Wasp, so I had no idea, but luckily they explained it pretty well, that what had happened, but I was a little lost on those points. So at this time, he was in the, what did they call it? Like an interdimensional realm. And that's where they get the idea that they can actually time travel. But the person that they need to really figure it out is Tony Stark, but he doesn't want to risk screwing up his current life or making everyone's lives even worse, because he's with... the lady Pippin, and they've got a daughter, and so, but he still, you can tell he's struggling because he lost Spider-Man, and he looks at his picture while he's washing dishes, and that was kind of sad. No, it kind of, looking at his picture reminded me of him disappearing in Infinity War, and that was I would say probably one of the most powerful scenes of that film. So it kind of eked in your heart a little bit and reminded you that he's kind of broken at this point, even though he's kind of right now living one of the best lives he's ever had with a family. He still can't forgive himself for his but inability to rise up and take on somebody, you know, that whole thing. He just can't forgive himself.
Yeah. Overall, with the main three, well, I guess Scarlet Witch would be included, main four, or not Scarlet Witch, Black Widow. The main four Avengers, even Hulk. I guess all of the Avengers, they have a good arc in this. Like, and they're all somewhat different. Like, Tony Stark moves on, but he's still haunted by what has happened, obviously. But he has a kid and everything, and he, you know, has to weigh any future actions with the family he's created. Captain America is, you know, a beacon of like moving forward of like, oh shit, bad stuff like this has happened to me before, so I should take the lead and help people through it. While also admitting loss. Same with Black Widow. And then Hulk comes to terms with the Hulk inside of him and made Hulk Banner, which is, I thought that was a weird choice to go with the Hulk, is have Banner and Hulk finally merge consciousness.
Yeah, I agree. Because it, when you see him in the diner, and it's exactly how you would imagine the scene would play out. He's got like a massive bowl of bacon, a massive bowl of eggs, and he's just like sitting there eating. And you know, he's talking about how I was able to merge the two together, and now I'm doing great. And then he has some little girls and little kids come by wanting a picture with him, and I don't know, it felt a tad cartoony at that point, which I would say is okay, because at this point is when we get our ray of hope that it's could be possible to travel back in time and fix everything. So at this point, we're a tad bit more hopeful. It would have been even more weird if it opened up with that scene when, after the 5 years later. Like, it would be a little weird. But at this point, mm-hmm. I'm able to accept it. But I do agree, it's kind of hard to be sympathetic towards a giant green thing acting like a person. I probably would have preferred it just to have been Bruce Banner as a human, maybe. Because Mark Ruffalo's just a great actor. And, you know, he can only do so much if he's a digital green guy.
Right, just, you know, still have him Hulk out and be Mark Ruffalo or be Bruce Banner. You know, you don't have to have him green the whole time.
Right.
It seems very impractical.
It does. And that's the best part about the Hulk, is the transformation. That's all that shit. The transformation's great. You look at like He-Man and Goku, like that's mm-hmm. the best part, is when they power up. And that's the great thing about the Hulk. You got this little wimpy white guy who just then becomes this powerful killing machine. And at this point, I mean, they make fun of it, and it's kind of funny when they go to New York during the first Avengers a movie, and the attack's happening. They see the Hulk, and he's just like beating the shit out of people mercilessly, just acting like a monster. But then they tell him to go over there and start beating stuff up for some reason. I didn't understand that, the now Mark Ruffalo Hulk, and he's just like, boom, this is insulting. I didn't understand it was to
add some sort of continuity in the timeline, where if civilian was looking out a window and saw the Hulk, you know, they'd see him being like the Hulk.
Okay, so that's why they did it. Yeah. Okay,
but they addressed the time travel thing kind of neat, I guess. They basically were like, yeah, any kind of thing that you think happens when you time travel and change the past, it doesn't. They're like, just forget everything you know. And if you travel in the past and you do anything, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah. They sweep it all under the rug, basically make it very easy for the writers. And I'm okay with that, honestly, because still, this movie's not about the plot so much as it is about the character progression. And we get a lot of that in very interesting ways when they actually go back in time. And I enjoyed it too, because you think about it, it's been what, 12 years since the first Iron Man film, or at least give or take. I think it's around there. And going back to like these older films, and I think they do it very well. It's kind of neat to, it's almost like going back and seeing yourself. Like, I was sitting in the theater watching this film 12 years ago, and man, I was really different then. You know, like I had different priorities, different things going on in my life. And now I'm seeing this again, but with a character that I've also grown with for 12 years. And they're mm-hmm. looking at the situation in a different light. I think the most powerful one is when Thor and Rocket Raccoon go to Asgard. And he talks with his mom before she dies. And that was powerful. That was really well done. And I guess talking about Thor for a second, at this point, he's kind of the schlubby. He hasn't forgiven himself for basically fucking up killing Thanos the first time. And he's gotten fat, drinking beer and yelling at people in Fortnite, which I loved. It's great. I absolutely loved everything about that because I also hated it. And the reason I say that is Thor's not supposed to be a fat drunkard. You know, he's supposed to be this powerful guy who's super confident, always confident in himself. And for the majority of the film, he is the complete opposite of that. And you hate it, but you also understand it. And it kind of makes you, I guess, empathize more with him. And it's painful to see someone that you think so highly of degrade to that point. And
I think a bad move of including Fortnite. Like, we're going to watch this movie in a few years and see him playing Fortnite and just be like, oh yeah, that was a phase we went through as a nation.
I agree. I mean, they could have just kept it off screen and not shown what they were playing. The scene would have still made so much sense. The whole joke is one of his friends is getting, I guess, yelled at by someone online. And he's like, oh, I know. I remember that guy. And he just chews him out like he's going to go and kick his ass or something. That whole joke. Yeah. We didn't have to see Fortnite, but, you know, who cares? It's fine. You know?
Yeah, it's fine.
It's fine.
I like the Thor character in this. I really enjoyed the moment where they realize that they can go back in time and try and get the stones from their own timelines. And Thor, when it comes Thor's turn to explain where the Tesseract cube is or something, right? I think it's the Tesseract. Isn't that the Tesseract? No, it's the red one. The red one. Whatever the red one is.
Right.
He basically stands in front of everyone by a whiteboard and explains the plot of Thor 2, the Dark World, to the whole place, and they all start falling asleep.
Yeah, that was funny. That was a good callback.
Yeah. Very self-aware as to one of the worst Marvel movies made. the past sequences were fun, man. I really enjoyed the Cap versus Cap fight that we got.
Oh, it was so great. Oh, it was so much fun. Like, I was talking about with Mountain Sage, you know, he was like, that's just so cheesy. But that's the point, honestly. You know, at this point, we're back in time. Why not have an old captain versus the newer captain and just, you know, go against each other? We're not going to get that any other time, especially now. We're not going to get it again. So why not have it out? It makes perfect sense. The setup was actually well done, since they were going to get the Tesseract, but they kind of fuck up. Well, the Hulk, the real Hulk, fucks it up. And then Loki gets the Tesseract and disappears. So now they're searching over Avengers headquarters for Loki. But then Cap is walking, the future Cap is walking down the hallway, and then the Cap of that timeline sees him and thinks it's Loki. He thinks he shapeshifted into himself, and then they fight. Perfect setup. Makes total sense. So I don't understand some of the hate on that part, because it was fun.
It was fun. And the whole Hail Hydra inside the elevator. It was setting up for that elevator fight, too, from Winter Soldier.
Yep, exactly. Exactly.
And then he just says Hail Hydra. That was fun. Let's see. What else do we got here? We went over kind of the Avengers timeline going in the past. We kind of touched on Thor. What was the other one?
I can't remember what the other timeline was. I guess nothing really happened. Avengers set. The reason why they're there is to get, let me try to remember. Bruce Banner was going to get the Time Stone from the bald lady. The Enchantress, not the Enchantress, the Sorceress Supreme, whatever her name is, mm-hmm. the bald lady yeah. from Doctor Strange. And it's kind of cool because she's like, it shows her what she was doing during the fight. She's like on the roof of their little chapel thing, like shooting time lasers at stuff and blowing it up. And it's just cool when he goes up there all hulked out and he's like, you've really got to just give this thing to me. And she does that punch and takes him out of the Hulk, and the Hulk falls asleep. And so the rest of the time they're talking, he's in that ghost form. And their conversation's actually really good. Like, it seems like a very natural conversation from two really totally different characters. And when he finally has to explain that the reason why he's there is Doctor Strange saw that this was the only way to win. And they just assume that they're following the path that he saw. And that's what finally makes her give him the stone. That was just a neat exchange. I really like that.
Yeah, I liked it too. She kind of explains that at the end, once all this is done on your timeline, you have to come back and bring the stones back to where they belong. And he's like, yeah, sure, I'll do that.
Right.
Even though at this point in his brain, he has to know they don't have all the Pym particles. They can't travel back in time.
Right. Right.
So he's lying? Is that, or is he just like, oh, we'll figure it out?
I think that's what it is. I think it's like, yeah, at this point, we just have to do it or else we're just all kind of screwed. So yeah. I can understand his reasoning for that. Yeah, I didn't even go into the Pym particle part. I mean, that's kind of the part that Ant-Man was the most useful in, was just getting them the particles, what he had left. And that was sort of his whole role in the thing.
Yeah, and also giving them the whole plot device of time That's travel. True.
The initial idea. So yeah, just a small part of the movie.
And then they go for the Tesseract cube, which is getting escorted out of the building, the Avengers Tower, I believe it was. And you see one of the many cameos, including Tilda Swinton, who is the Sorceress Supreme. Robert Redford shows up, and this is after he's declared that he is done acting.
You're right. That was Robert Redford.
Yeah.
I forgot about that.
Robert Redford shows up. Lots of cameos in this movie. Natalie Portman was in it. I don't think she had any speaking lines, though.
Nope.
Rene Russo. A few others. I don't know. I can't really think of them off the top of my head. Captain Marvel cameo.
Yeah, about just call it a cameo.
It was cool seeing all those cameos. It was just cool going back and visiting all these movies, you know.
Agreed.
And even Agreed. Touch on to Agent Carter a little bit, the TV series, because Jarvis was in it. Jarvis was the butler for the older Stark, Robert Stark, I think.
I thought it was Harvey.
Howard.
Howard, that's it.
And you got Iron Man with a kind of a touching moment with his pops.
Oh, that was so sad. That whole exchange was so great. That whole scene was really nice because it was powerful also seeing the Cap looking at Agent Carter and just having that. I'm guessing that was the same actress. I couldn't really tell.
Yeah, I think it was.
I'm positive it's got to be. Him having a little moment kind of looking at her, and that plays a big role a little later in the film for his payoff. But it was a touching scene, that whole part. It was fun too. But yeah, though, that was good. But I feel like there's one timeline we're missing. I was thinking there were three.
Well, they go back to New York. It's two groups, essentially. And then there's the Thor one. Because some of them are there to get the Tesseract, and then Hulk is there to get the Time Stone, and then someone else is there to get the Loki staff or something, right?
Oh, that's right. Yes, yes. Because they end up with the staff, not the Tesseract.
Yeah, Cap is getting the staff, and Iron Man and Ant-Man are trying to get the Tesseract, and Hulk's trying to get the Time Stone.
Oh, there's one we forgot. The stone that's in the beginning of Guardians of the Galaxy. That's it. And that's also a big plot point. So they're, it's Nebula, and who else is on that team?
War Machine. I can't remember.
War Machine, that's right. All the B characters, C characters, are going to, and it's such a fun scene because you're watching where, oh shit, what's that? Star-Lord's dancing around the very beginning of the film, you know, with his little headphones in, and they're like over on the side watching him, and they end up knocking him out and going to get that ball that has the, which stone is that one? It's the purple one. I can't remember the name of it. Maybe the reality stone?
I don't know. Anyway, soul stone, maybe?
It could be the... No, the soul stone. Oh, the soul stone. That's the other one. Because they go back to the mountain. Oh, my right. God. There's way more. Shit. Okay. Let me stick with the Guardians one.
Yeah, the stick with the Guardians.
But the part that ends up tipping off Thanos of that time of what's going on is somehow the... future Nebula that's in that time period, as well as the regular Nebula of that time period, are like sharing the same neural link. And she, like, the bad one that's still with Thanos, projects an image of what they're trying to do. And that's how he gets tipped off of the whole thing. That was could have been way more convoluted, but I think they explained it really well. Cause I was kind of wondering that, like, how is Thanos going to figure out with people jumping around different time periods what they're doing and catch on to it? Or are they just going to run into him somehow? But I thought that was kind of clever how they're able to basically use their now ally as a beacon to try and stop them.
Yeah. Yeah. It was kind of neat. I guess you have to throw Thanos back in there, I guess, which this Thanos is weird. Like, I didn't feel the connection I felt with this one than I did in the Infinity War one.
He is way more aggressive. A different character. He kind of is. I agree. And as at the end of the film, I kind of have a slight problem with some of the comments he says. I guess we'll get to that in a moment. That kind of made him feel different from Infinity War. But in my mind, he's sort of getting a fast track to accomplish his goal. Whereas he was having to go around painstakingly, you know, finding the stones, killing people, doing his plan and all that stuff, where maybe that kind of aged him a bit or made him a little more, appreciative, something like that, more humble possibly, whereas maybe at this point he's kind of at the height of his eagerness to get this done that he's just not as, for lack of a better word, level-minded as he was in Infinity War. I kind of took it to be in that way, that the why he was a little bit different.
See, this is where the time travel part of it messes me up. You know, if they're taking the time stones out, Thanos could just, like, what he supposed to do? Is he supposed to wait? Is he supposed to wait and know that in the future he wins? Like, what would have been the right move for Thanos at that point?
With them taking all the stones, what would be the correct move? I think the move he made was the correct move. That's the only move he had, or else he wouldn't be able to... if they take the stones and go back and do what they were wanting to do, then he would still be dead and everyone would be back. Of course, he doesn't. Yeah. Well, he actually does know that he succeeds. So that's why maybe he's just so aggressive that, okay, I accomplished what I need to do, but now they're going to undo it all and I might not be able to do it again. So maybe that's why he was a little more ruthless, whereas he kind of, throughout Infinity War, he pretty much had everything under control. There was... the only moment where he almost lost control was with Thor. And other than that, he was really fine. So maybe that's the reason that he was more aggressive and went after it so hard. But I agree. It did throw me off as well.
We also had the passing of a major character in Black Widow.
Yeah. It was a cool
scene where they're trying to get the stone. Although, I don't know if it was cool. It was a throwback to the very last movie of
It wasn't,
No, you weren't happy with that?
Oh, I wasn't. It just didn't have the same impact. I was sad. It was sad, but I think it went on maybe a little too long. I don't know. Or maybe it's just because I didn't care that much about Black Widow to begin with. I'm happy she died and he lived, even though I expected it to be the other way around.
Yeah, Hawkeye is just kind of a cooler character, I think.
He is. He is. He's got more depth, I feel. Yeah. I think they had their moments to add more depth to Black Widow, but she was just she's always been a support. And where I could see him taking more of the spotlight. And maybe that's just acting chops. He's just a good actor.
So yeah, she ends up sacrificing herself to get that stone back. Nebula managed to swap places with current time Nebula and go back where all the stones are. Tony Stark builds a gauntlet, which also is like, I was thinking, you know, what's the point of Peter Dinklage's character? Like, didn't he harness the power of a star to make the gauntlet? But Tony Stark does it over here with an iBuy power computer rig or something.
Yeah. That's a really good point. That's a bit of a problem. Anyways, meh. And somehow his suit's able to morph into the gauntlet, like morph holes for the stones at the very last minute. That's a slight problem, but slight problem, completely nitpicky.
I'm here to ruin the film for you, Biggie.
Don't ruin the film.
I got more.
The saddest part yet. No, if the one scene has some problems in it that I cry the most in, I might have to come hurt you because that was my favorite scene. Don't ruin it for me.
Oh, I can't wait until we get there. So they get all back. They got the stones. They got this gauntlet. And Hulk is like, yo, I got to do it. I'm the strongest. You saw what it did to Thanos. I'm going to have to do it. I'm going to have to snap and bring everybody back. Puts on the gauntlet, snaps it. And Hawkeye's phone starts ringing?
Yes. Yeah, and he sees that
it's his wife. Yeah. And then he looks out the window and the giant Thanos Star Destroyer is there. And I thought they all died from this explosion. Like, there's didn't Ant-Man or Hawkeye take basically a nuclear bomb to the face?
I thought Ant-Man died because it was a sweet scene too. It would have been a pretty good death. He sees that the birds have come back and they're in this little garden with a window, and he walks over there. He's looking at them, but then that moment where they look up and see Thanos' big ass ship, they start raining down missiles, and you just see him getting blown the fuck back. But no, they all live. They're all actually doing pretty good. Not really damaged or hurt. They took those missiles pretty well.
Yeah.
I address the weird part about how they got that ship there? And
yeah, sure.
Okay. Correct me if I'm wrong, but before they're about to go back and the Nebula is going to join them, and this is the evil one. She has the ship in her pocket. Did you see that? That's right. They're able to use the PIM particles.
Yeah.
I forgot, because that's how they get the other ship to that timeline, is they're able to shrink it down. My bad. I totally forgot about that. Yeah, they're able to shrink ships with the PIM particles and put them in their pocket. And that's maybe a tad too convenient. I don't know. That bothers me more than anything else. Like, if you can just throw a big ass ship with nuclear warheads in your pocket, I don't know. It would have been more cool if it was just sitting there waiting for them for however long. And they're like, oh my God, this ship has just been here. and maybe it's wrecked other stuff while it's been there. I don't know. Something.
And
like
how did
that
they? How did they cool. shrink it without the technology?
Yeah, like it you doesn't know? Have a. I guess it doesn't. Well, okay.
Ant-Man needs the suit point. To go small.
Exactly. So you would imagine if they're shrinking the ship, the people have to be in the ship, but all the people in the ship are fine and they don't have suits. So I could understand if it was just the ship, because the reasoning was you'll go crazy because you're shrunk down and you get big. Something about your mind goes insane. So the ship would be fine, but what about the people inside of it unless they're just somehow immune? Thanos must be immune. Maybe it's just a human thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know, bro. Oh, they got to fight. They got to fight, Biggie. That's why it's all happening. Okay? They got to fight Thanos.
That's what it says on the script. So then they fight. And it is a glorious fight. I have to say, it was awesome. Fun.
Yeah, it was awesome. It was, the whole fight scene is great.
You get this wonderful shot of Captain America just standing there alone with only half his shield. And somehow he got his helmet back, even though he didn't have it on when the place exploded. Just standing there with like the sun setting, scorched earth, and a massive ass Thanos army just on the horizon with this big ass ship. It is, to me, like it was probably one of the best scenes. Like just not even just how it looked, but just the setup. You've got a dude who is like 18 years old during the beginning of World War II, who became a super soldier, but then was froze for like 40 years. And now he's standing in present day against a space army and ready to take him on by himself. Like, that's just a cool story arc for him. And I loved it.
Yeah, it was neat. And let me tell you, it made it 100% better watching that in 3D.
I'm sure that one scene had to look kind of cool.
No, you forget. Your brain shuts off 3D after like 5 minutes of watching the movie.
It's
just dimmer. It's just dim. That's
lowers the vibrancy. Yeah. No, it is. I totally agree. But then luckily, with everyone back, Doctor Strange, or maybe all of his peeps, teleport in all of the Wakandan armies and all the wizard armies and whoever else they can get. Everyone shows up, and it is a touching scene, especially seeing Doctor Strange back. I'm like, oh sweet, this is gonna be so sick. I bet Doctor Strange is gonna like just go up to Thanos and just start like teleporting around him, like throwing his little time bomb things at him and you know, like kicking him in the face and like multiplying himself. Like, it's going to be the sickest fight in the world. You know what Doctor Strange does? Do you know what he does through the whole fight?
What does he do? What does he do, Biggie?
Biggest problem with this movie. The time I was ready to just blow a load. And you know what he does? He holds back water.
He saves the armies from the impending ocean.
What's the ocean? Where did that ocean come from? I don't remember any oceans around that area. I just seen like a big field out in Atlanta, Georgia somewhere. They put a building there that's for the Avengers. I don't remember seeing any oceans or any large sums of water.
Look, so Biggie, there was a big water main break during the fight, all right? You didn't want everybody's getting wet and armor rusting and all that. Like, there's sensitive electronics on this battlefield. He doesn't want them to fry out, Biggie. Come on.
Man, that was just so disappointing. Like, I understand why. I mean, really, he should be able to beat them all by himself to a degree, because he's just, I mean, he's pretty overpowered. So I can understand them having a hard time. He's not a punchy, kicky guy, honestly. But surely they could have come up with something else than him holding back water. I mean, come on, guys. But that's my only problem. That's my biggest nitpick with the whole entire film. Everything else with that fight is a lot of fun. Getting to see Scarlet Witch get really, really pissed. And you're like, oh, yeah, she's a character. And like, really doing a number on Thanos until he finally outsmarts her, kind of. That was really cool.
He doesn't really outsmart her. He just like, he knows that he's beaten. He's just like, yo, shoot those mortars off. I'm in deep shit here.
Well, he like, oh, it's cool. He like takes one of the stones out and like puts it in his hand and like blasts her.
He does that, someone to else? Captain Marvel after he tries to headbutt her and she just looks at him.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Which, you know, cameo of the movie, Captain Marvel, she's in it, everybody. Just looking smug. Always looking smug.
She does. She talks some shit, like some hardcore shit to them. Like that whole, what was she say? The Hawkeye or someone? Like, this is Interstellar Affairs. You need to back up, buddy.
Yeah. She was like, this is an A-B conversation, so see your way out, Hawkeye.
You need to make like a banana and split.
Right. Quit dipping in the Kool-Aid when you don't know the flavor. All right.
No, it was dumb. It was so, and it's my biggest, it's the part that I feared the most from the end of Captain Marvel, when she just became so OP she could fly through ships, you know?
Which she did in this
movie. And then the setup was awesome because the guns are just blasting down on, but then all of a sudden they change direction upward and just start shooting. It's hazy. We don't know what's going on. They all start commenting, what are they shooting at? I'm like, oh shit, is there like an army or something coming that I just totally forgot about? Like, oh, this is exciting. No, it's her. And then she just flies through the ship and it's like that ship didn't even matter. And I'm like, you know, it looks cool. It's kind of awesome, but it's also kind of not, because everyone else is super powerful but grounded in some way, where she even got hit by an Infinity Stone, but really she was fine and no one else could take that kind of punishment. Maybe Thor, but even he's limited on what he can really dish out quickly. And I'm starting to see a bit of a problem with her character, unless they have some way they can tone her down a notch or two. Fights are just not gonna matter all that much.
Right. I've seen a lot of people complain about like the Superman complex with her, where, you know, it's like Superman where he's just too OP. But I'd even argue that it's worse than Superman, because Superman, well, he's Superman and he can do anything. That's not his character isn't to be this unstoppable guy that just fights dudes. He like upholds these ideals and he saves people. Like, the stories about Superman are like him saving people, not really fighting, you know?
Yes, at least I agreed.
Classic Superman. And for her, it just like it removes any kind of ideal from her. Like, she's just what? She's just super powerful.
Right. You know, and I think the moment we talked about before, where she was just poo-pooing anyone who's not on the same level as her, and that's as if she's poo-pooing humanity, you know, and that she finds herself above everything else. And maybe that's true, but that can only go so far to be interesting, till she should really just become a bad guy. At that point, you know, that she's not going to really consider people's viewpoints because they're not on her level. It just doesn't make sense. No one else has really done that. So, and now she's doing it. And since this character is still so new, it's a bit off-putting.
Yeah. And I think Rocket Raccoon is the only one that got a burn on her.
Yeah, that was after pretty good.
It's after the 5 years. And she's like, yo, I can't, like, all that shit that's happened, it's happened everywhere. I gotta go. Or I won't be able to talk for a while. Rocket's just like, yeah, what do you gotta do? Get another haircut or something? You fucking dyke. He didn't say dyke, but he implied it.
it was a little implied. Yeah, no, that was a pretty good burn, but I'm really shocked that she wasn't in more of it. Makes sense why, but after that point, we don't see her until the very end.
And there's that moment where Spider-Man is literally running the gauntlet across
the
field, and he gets himself into a pickle. she is like, here, give it to me. And he looks across the battlefield and he's like, are you sure you're gonna be able to do this? And she's like, oh, don't worry. And then she takes a sassy stance, puts her fist on her hip. And she's like, I got help. And then you see all the women of Marvel there to help her carry this gauntlet.
Oh, is that the part people keep talking about? People kept saying about this Women of Marvel part. I guess I just didn't notice.
No, I didn't notice. I thought it was glaring. It was very obtuse. And and then it just spanned. Like someone shows up and they're like, oh, don't worry, she's got help. And I think it's like fucking Pepper Potts in Iron Man armor. Like, you haven't been relevant in this franchise for ages. Like, get out of here, Gwen Stefani. Why don't you go hawk your goddamn natural lifestyle medicine over at fucking Goop or something? you don't belong here.
And that, I actually want to ask you something, because I thought in the end of Iron Man 3, she got like superpowers or something. Didn't she? She's able to shoot lasers. Right.
I forgot about that. What happened? She gets like super hot. Like Guy Pearce is in the movie. He's that guy that gets real hot.
Yeah, yeah.
And she gets hot. Doesn't she? I forget, it's been ages.
Yeah, it's like heat or something, because then Tony's like, what the fuck are you doing? She's like, I don't know. And but no, she's flying around in an Iron Man suit. And I'm like, yeah. Didn't she have lasers? Like, why would she need an Iron Man suit if she could shoot lasers out of her face? But it was cool, I guess. It was cool seeing an Iron Woman, even though it was completely useless.
It was handled in Infinity War so much better, where they got their moments. Like, everybody got their moments, and the women got their moments. They did cool stuff, but it wasn't like, you know, they didn't like stop the movie. All of the women look at the camera and they're like, get prepared for women and girl power right now, because we're in this movie too. That's what it felt like to me. And I'm all for women in Marvel. I want awesome woman characters. I want to see them do cool stuff. I just don't want them to stop the movie and point it out. You know, just give them the cool scenes, and then I'll look at it and be like, oh shit, that was cool. You don't have to like throw it in my face, man. Come on.
Man, I don't know how I missed that. I must have been wiping my eyes or something during that point. I can't remember that. Interesting. Although I did like the exchange between her and Peter Parker, because I just love, he's just like holding that little glove and he's like, hi, I'm Peter Parker. And it was very cute moment that I really enjoyed.
You know, every time you talk about Spider-Man, it seems like you love the character, but you still to this date have not finished watching Homecoming.
Because it's like moments of brilliance he works in. Like, he is by far the most awkward, strange character of all of them. Like, he's one of the more unique ones. I'll give him that, because he's a little kid, he's still figuring out what he wants to do, and he's like, hey, I'm here, I don't know what's going on, this is crazy. And it's fun to see him like that, but I just don't want to see a whole movie of that. That's what if this whole movie was him as the lead character being like, oh, I'm Spider-Man, oh, I'm so awkward around women, oh no, boner, I wouldn't dig it. It just doesn't work for me. But as a side thing, yeah, very cool. Really enjoy it. And even seeing Tony Stark when he's in his last moments was it was sweet, because I thought it fit his character very well. Like, you know, he's maybe not quite realizing that Tony's dying. And he's just trying to be like, hey, thank you for doing this. You know, did you see everything that happened? It was kind of incredible. And Tony's just like blankly staring at him.
Bro, I'm dying, dude.
Like, dude, I am checking out.
Let me talk to my wife instead of you, fucking little pipsqueak. Get out of the way. I gotta talk to fucking Gwen over there.
That death scene, man, that was like, well, let's set it up. And I gotta say, it was kind of a cool setup. I didn't expect that to happen. Basically, Iron Man is fighting Thanos, but Thanos finally gets a hold of the glove somehow. Is that when he shoots Weirdo with the Infinity thing?
Yeah, he shoots Weirdo, and then she comes back and tries to take it off.
Okay. Okay, yeah, that's right. Well, basically, he's got the glove, all the stones are on it, and he is just about to do the snap again. Now, I guess before we get to that point, this is where I think what Guido was mentioning, we talked about earlier, you could tell a shift in his character, Thanos. And it was interesting that they related. So basically, at this point, he knows that in the future, he succeeds. They're in the past to stop the redo everything to get back to the way it was. And he knows that. So he tells them that he is going to now wipe everyone out and just start with brand new organisms. He's basically going to play God. And he says especially that he never took any of this stuff personally, what he's done through his time. And I agree with that. I don't think he has. But he makes an exception for Earth that he's going to enjoy seeing it burn. And that is a point where I was like, yeah, okay. I don't know why he had to take it personally all of a sudden, but still, I kind of relate it to being a rush of power. You know, he's now years ahead of schedule, and he knows what happens at that point, so maybe he hates him even more for that they could actually stop him when at that time they really couldn't. So maybe it just pisses him off and he has a moment of he loses his cool, you could say. Mm-hmm. But he's about to snap his fingers, but the stones are on his gauntlet.
He does snap his fingers.
He does snap them, but nothing happens. It's just a little metal clink.
Yeah.
And then we look over at Iron Man. He had grabbed all of the stones and they somehow like quickly formed onto his little baby hands. And
he does have infant sized hands. It's really off putting.
He can't sport those stones, man. He just doesn't have the hands. Well, he says Thanos before he steps, he says, what do you say? I am infinite. I am inevitable.
He says that before he dies, too.
Right, right.
In the beginning of the movie.
Exactly. And, but then he snaps his fingers, nothing happens. And he look over at Iron Man and he goes, I am Iron Man, and snaps his fingers. And all of Thanos' army is turned to dust, including Thanos himself. And then that's the point where he kind of has his final moments with everyone before he passes away. And I thought that was a really cool moment. Because that's the last line of the first Iron Man film. And it's kind of all went a big circle to that point. And that was cool. Nicely done.
Yeah.
I was afraid they were going to do a joke. I was afraid he was going to go like, I am, well, whatever. And then just snap it. And like, oh, you Tony Stark. That's so funny. And
I am tired of your shit, Thanos.
There you go. That's perfect. That sounds like something they probably wrote in the first draft. But no, he does it real classy, real nice. And then we jump through to the big tearjerker, the point of the film that I was almost becoming audible in my weeping. And that is the funeral of Tony Stark.
Yeah.
Oh, man. What a scene. So well done, too.
It was good. But it was sad. I should mention, as he was dying. as he was dying, Gwen came up and she was like saying, oh, you did this. You brought everyone here. It was like... While I was watching it, it seemed like it was a metaphor for like the whole 11 years that it's taken to get to this point.
Oh, interesting. Interesting.
She was just saying, you know, this is all because of you. We're here because of you. This is, you know, as he's drawing his last breath. So I thought that was kind of a neat little parallel.
Oh, very insightful. I did not catch that. That's really good. The part of that scene that I'm sure is no surprise that got me the most choked up was how gracefully the camera moved. Basically, the setup is they're at their cabin and they're all on the shore, and they've got a little reef of him and his little heart, and they're going to set out the sea. And the camera's moving from the shore inward towards the house, but grouped up are basically all of the franchises. So I can't remember the first ones they start with. I think it's the Iron Man group, and then it goes like all the people from Guardians, and then Thor, and keep going back and forth, and then see Spider-Man. He's further in the back. And that with the music, with the tone, and really how truly everyone looks very sad. It almost feels like you're at a real funeral, but in a way it's also kind of a moment to reflect again at all the time that's passed. And the point you made makes even more sense that, you know, we've gone this incredible journey with all of these characters we got to know and love, for most of us meet for the very first time. And there's no way I can imagine they could ever replace them. You know, they just, at this point, it feels too iconic.
And, yeah, I felt that too. Like, at that, as I was watching that, I was like, what are they going to do? Like, they're not really giving me a lot of hope for the continuation of the franchise.
Yes.
With one caveat, and that's... as Guardians of the Galaxy, of Thor joining Guardians of the Galaxy, if they do that, which will be great.
Yes, agreed. Yeah, I was shocked by that ending, how it looks like he's joining the crew. And I think that would be a great, I guess, group of people. I don't know. Maybe in some ways, I think Thor might overpower the spotlight a little too much. And I mean, they hinted that as well, because they do a little gag on who's really the leader. And that was funny, because I was kind of thinking the same thing at this point. So that could be a lot of fun to see. Maybe it's just one movie where they just take him back to his planet or something. Who the hell knows?
Right.
But no, it was just a really incredible scene and really well done. And not that there's anything special about a bunch of people just standing in groups next to a pretty neat looking cabin. Probably, you know, out in Georgia somewhere. But
home,
it was,
man.
Just
remember they went to his home.
That's right. But the scene itself isn't anything incredible. It's just a house with some people standing out there. But it's the memories and all the really well done writing over the years, developing these characters and developing these stories. And I feel ultimately always respecting the audience for their time and their money. You know, I don't know if I've ever seen a Marvel film, and these especially, the if any were an Endgame, where I felt gypped, like I was just a highway robbery, you know, how we can really feel a lot of times with some films now. But it takes a lot of work, dedication, and some risks to build that kind of connection, and realizing that with just a camera floating between some actors. And I think that's the point where I realized just... You know, in a way, with Tony dying, there is a piece of this whole universe truly going away, and I may not be able to get back into it again because of that. But honestly, I wouldn't change anything about the past. And it really resonated with me. And even that scene now, thinking back, kind of gives me goosebumps. Because I just don't know if I've ever felt that way about a film series before. Normally, you're pretty sick of it by the third or fourth one, and you're just ready for it to be over. But not so much with this. And I think that's truly special.
Yeah, I agree on all counts. It was a wonderful, wild 10 years of movies, 11 years of movies that, man, I remember... watching Iron Man in the theaters, being so pumped, and I was way younger than I am now, 11 years younger, and just watching that funeral scene and seeing all those characters for a brief moment of time. You know, I'm watching it and kind of those memories of seeing the movies that they've all appeared in over the years and how they premiered and everything, and correlating with how I've grown in the past 11 years, it's cool. It's like, it's such a filmmaking achievement.
It truly is. It really is. And I just, you know, with the start of Infinity War, when we discussed it in the past, you know, it's truly amazing how many things went right to get to that point. And, you know, people might mark it off as just being a superhero film and, you know, maybe doesn't deserve as much praise as it gets. But I think it's truly an accomplishment that Disney, as well as everyone at Marvel, should be very, very proud that they achieved, because it made, you know, I'm sure it'll probably happen again, but I don't know. It's kind of hard for me to picture it happening again to that level. But you know, good for them. Good for them. And at the end of that, we get to see kind of the closure of all the characters. Of course, Tony's dead. The next one is what happens to Captain America. He basically takes on the role of taking all the stones back to their proper places, which kind of seems like it happens during the funeral. Maybe it happened a little bit afterwards. It was very quick together. They're still at the cabin. But either way, who is? I think it's Bruce Banner at the controls. He's saying that, you know, yeah, it should only take 5 seconds, but he's got all the time he needs to get it all done. And so Captain goes back, and then after 5 seconds, they bring him back, but he doesn't appear. And at that point, I thought, ooh, that's interesting. I wonder if they're... I was expecting, like, the timeline to change. Like, maybe they look out and, like, the world's been destroyed or it's been mutated. Oh, something's happened. I was expecting that. Like, and they're like, oh, man, this is, like, the lead on to the next series. Like, we gotta go back and figure out what happened to Captain America so we can fix all this. That sounds like a complete mess because we have to do time travel again, but I was thinking that, honestly. But then they look over and there he is, an old man. I guess he'd be 80 ish, yeah, somewhere there, looking out at the water. And who's the black guy who flies around? Icarus. Falcon. Okay. Falcon goes over there and talks to him. And it's such a sweet, subtle exchange that I just found to be just so refreshing. Sad. All of it's sad. But it was real nice because they were just kind of... It was cool to see Captain kind of sitting there not worrying about much anymore. And Chris, yeah, Evans is a solid actor. Real good at performing. And, you know, he's all looking like an old guy. And but it was just like a breath of fresh air from when we've seen him from the beginning, him being the scrawny kid who just was freaked out about everything, to having to be the hero all the time, tough, always on point, to now just kind of in a retrospective mode, thinking about the life he's lived. And he went back, he stayed in the past and lived life with Agent Carter. And that was really, yeah, sweet. He hands the shield over to Sam, flying around guy.
Falcon. Yeah,
Falcon, thank you. And so he's Captain America now, I guess.
Yeah, Cap needed a win. If you think about every movie he's been in, it always ends on a very horrible note for him.
He gets fucked over, yeah, all so the time.
He wins the war, but he, yep, gets frozen. He finds out that Hydra has taken over S.H.I.E.L.D. and destroyed, like, people that he's trusted for years have turned on him. He doesn't sign the declaration to register as a superhero. So he ends ties with his best friend, Tony Stark. He watches Tony Stark.
His other best friend almost tries to kill him.
Yes, his other best friend almost tries to kill him. He watches everybody get dusted. So it's time for Captain America to have a happy ending. And he got exactly that at the end of this. And it was good. It wrapped up his story really great.
Right. Absolutely. You know, and that's another point that gets brought up, is everything was kind of tied in a nice, neat bow. And a lot of times that's used in a negative connotation. And in most cases, I kind of use it as a yardstick. You know, I feel like when you complain about things getting tied up neatly, it's normally because you don't feel the characters deserve it. And that's fair. I point to the prequels, for instance. Everything gets tied up perfectly. But you do not ever, you never get a moment to really get into Anakin's character or Obi-Wan's character or any of them, because they all feel so bland and boring and you just don't get into them. Whereas I'm happy that things get tied up here, because these characters were written perfectly, or not perfectly, they were written very well, to the point that you're able to get emotionally involved with them. And I like to see a happy ending for them. I don't know. Even with Tony dying, it's sad, but I feel like it's a good ending for that character, because he finally gets the rest, because they owe a lot to him. He was one who was able to get the Avengers armed and prepared for every task that they were able to handle. He carries a lot of that weight. So it's neat to see him finally get the rest. And all these characters, I think they deserve a nice, tidy ending, and they all deserve it because they're written so well.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Fun movie. Very good movie. Fun. I gotta say, though, just to put it on the record, I liked Infinity War more.
I think that's fair. I think that's really fair. When it comes to me, I have a hard time rating films based on if I would watch it again, because there's a lot of movies that when I get so emotionally involved in them, I don't want to watch them again, because I like having that one time viewing and having that memory with how I viewed it. And then letting it rest, because I don't want to ruin it. You know, I because there's just no way I'm going to relive it. Mm-hmm. And so I can't ever pick rewatchability as being like, this is a good one. I'd almost say I don't want to rewatch Infinity War or Endgame, which makes me like them even more. But if I was just going to pick between the two, I think I might have to overall agree that Infinity War is a more superb film. But honestly, I kind of view them both being the same film, because they both really rely on each other to tell the entire story. So I kind of have a hard time just saying that I like the first part better than the second, because I feel like they're both really the same film. They just couldn't put them both together.
Yeah,
if I had to pick one half more than the other, I guess I would pick Infinity War, but it would be slight, like a sliver of a margin, because I enjoyed being emotional during Endgame because it felt so deserved. Mm-hmm. And felt so powerful.
Cool. Great movie. Well, I don't know if we're going to see that again. I don't know if they can recreate it over another decade.
I don't think so. You know, I think for me and you, I don't think we'll ever get that again. For people growing up now, I think they'll have it. I don't know. It just seems like with an age thing, like the older you get, I guess it's harder to rekindle those moments or get those moments going again. Maybe it's just because you've already experienced it, but maybe with the next phase or the phase after that, people growing up will have the same moments we had for Infinity War.
It's true. You know, I mean, we got Fantastic Four, the X-Men are probably, they're gonna sit on that franchise while they let the dust die from Fox fucking it up. You know, Deadpool, all that stuff is coming to Disney, so they got a lot to work with still.
They certainly do. They certainly do. And I think they're in good hands. I'm very interested to see what they do. And who knows? You know, maybe I'll be feeling the same way after the next big phase. You know, that's like, there's just no way. I didn't think I'd make it this far and feel this way. So, hell, maybe they still got some tricks up their sleeve that'll pull us right back in.
Yeah.
Well, goodness. I really don't want to say these next words. Oh.
Before you do that.
Yeah, let's do that. Let's do that. Okay. I might cut that part out. All right, let's jump straight into voicemails.
All right, here we go.
Oh, hello there, Just Okay Movies. Mountain's Age here. I was wondering, what is the most violent thing you've ever seen in a kid's movie? I was wondering this because for some reason I was thinking of the movie Beethoven, the like early 90s movie about the giant dog, the St. Bernard. And at the end of that movie, like the bad guy is this evil vet that's trying to just kill animals for some reason, like put them all down. And he's got like this giant tray filled with like syringes. Like they're all uncapped and like filled with chemicals. And at the end of the movie, they like drive a car into the tray and like it goes flying and all these syringes stick in the vet's chest and kills him. And then the kid driving the car that effectively killed the vet is just like, cool, that's awesome. It's really weird. So yeah, what's the most violent thing you've ever seen in a kid's movie? That's it, bye.
Ooh. Oh, Mountain Sage, that's a really good question, man. Wow, Beethoven was way more violent than I remember.
I don't remember that, man.
I don't either. Goodness gracious. I know mine. It's at least the only one that's come to mind for me. And I went to go see the movie Small Soldiers in theaters when I was a little kid. And I don't know what I was expecting, honestly. I guess I just saw the commercials and I thought, oh, this looks really cool. But honestly, that movie kind of freaked me out a bit. The one scene in particular is when one of the toy soldiers of the bad group gets a nail gun and starts shooting at the people. And he hits one of like the dad in the knee and you see the nail sticking out. I was like, Jesus Christ. That may be worse than a gun. I don't know. I mean, gun's pretty bad, but maybe it's just because it's not used a lot. Just seeing a nail sticking out of someone's foot and you can just see them shooting at the people. I don't know. That's probably, I'm sure I've seen worse, but that's the only one that comes to mind. That was a weird movie.
Off the top of my head, there's a moment, an iconic moment in the movie Who Framed Roger Rabbit? Where the main villain, Christopher Lloyd, I believe it is, gets run over with a steamroller. Do you remember that?
Oh, no, I don't.
And so the steamroller runs over him and he gets up and he's flat, you know, like a cartoon. You know, he's 2D, essentially, and walking like, blah, 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 blah. But the act of him getting run over by the steamroller, it was so horrifying. Like it goes very slowly over his feet is where it starts. And he's like screaming and trying to like push against the steamroller to get it to stop. And like just shouting and flailing all over. It even left like a trail of blood. If my memory is serving me correctly, but
oh my God,
that's what I remember. And there could be arguments made if Who Framed Roger Rabbit is even a children's movie.
Yeah, you know, that's I don't want to call it a hidden gem because it's well known, but there's just scenes in that film that are, you just will never see again. You know, I think there's that one scene where you've got Looney Tunes characters and Disney characters on the same screen.
Yeah, I think so.
Like playing piano or something like that. And it's just like, that's a scene. There's no way you'll ever see that again unless Disney bought, you know, the Looney Tunes franchise. And also just the odd sexuality of the film and the humor. It's just it's a fascinating movie. And I agree. I'm not sure if it's a children's film or not, but man, that's a good one. I'm going to have to rewatch that. Mm-hmm. Good choice.
Maybe we can talk about it on the next episode.
Oh yeah. We can talk about it on the upcoming episode. And we actually have an email as well from our good friend of the show, Ty Bellsprout. Hey, Just Okay Movies. Hope you're all doing great. Honestly, can't say enough about this movie or the franchise he's talking about, Endgame. But I tried so hard to make this email a short email. If no spoilers, don't read this on the pod now. Yeah, we're past that. I loved Endgame. It isn't a perfect movie, but I can understand if you see it as self-congratulatory in parts. But as an end of a 20-year franchise, what an exclamation point. It gives the two main protagonists of the series emotionally charged send-offs that left me feeling like I was losing a friend, and a final fight attempting to one-up the Battle of Wakanda. As a longtime fan of comic books, it meant a lot to me to see not just characters come to life, just as you always dreamed they could, but even have these giant cosmic events that are cheesy, ridiculous, and childish playing out with honest sincerity. Compared to other superhero films, it never felt like they compromised their beloved characters for lowest denominator variants to sell tickets and allowed them to mature and grow just like they do in the comics. It's insane to see how successful this franchise has been and also how it changed the cinema landscape. The future of the MCU will be different from now on, and maybe it goes to being a B-list franchise as always there in the background. But for me, they've earned my trust. Thanks for reading. Have a great rest of the pod and night. Yeah, I completely agree. I think we definitely hit a lot of those points in both reviews that they could have went an easy route and wrote poorer characters. Characters like you would see in the X-Men franchise at this point, honestly, and maybe like the Spider-Man before the Homecoming one. You know, just you know, putting them out there, doing some superhero things and calling it a day. But they went the extra step. And I just have a feeling that Marvel and maybe even some of Disney are just full of comic book nerds, but also people who are willing to say, yeah, that's cool, but maybe we need to rein it in a bit and not go too far. It kept a nice even balance to include everyone, no matter what knowledge they have of the material. And I think it shows. You know, I think it clearly shows. And we've seen other films, like with Justice League and stuff, bellwethers, you know, that, you know, you can continue to do it that the old school way, or you can get on the Marvel way and really focusing on making strong, powerful characters with interesting stories and actually showing you give a damn about the people's time that are sitting down there and viewing the film for maybe upwards of $15 to $20. And Marvel's got that. And I'm very, very impressed, constantly impressed.
It's an impressive feat. Absolutely.
Yep, absolutely. Well, good email. Okay. All right, everyone, gather in around Biggie for a moment.
Oh, you got big news, Biggie?
I got some big news, everybody.
Oh, I can't wait. Oh man, I can't. It's gonna be a big guest on the next episode.
Oh man, of course. speaking of next episode, God, Guido, you're making this harder.
Sorry.
No, you're fine, buddy. You're fine. I wanted to start by saying just how much I've been really touched by everyone. Tuning into the pod, listening, sending emails like Mountain and Ty did. We've gotten tons of others in the past, tweets, everything. It's meant the world to me. And it makes it painful for me to say that this will actually be the last episode. But I don't necessarily want it to be a sad thing. You know, Guido and I have talked about it. You know, we've done some really cool things here. Honestly, and
very cool.
Very yeah. Cool. It's been an absolute blast. And Guido and the fellas and all of y'all, I feel like you all have made me a better person. You know, I remember listening back to episodes and just being like, oh my God, I'm just so bad at this. And, you know, I'm still self-conscious about myself. But, you know, with you all being one to tune in and listen, you all have made me want to be better. And so I hope that this pod has also brought a lot of enjoyment in your lives as well. And it's fascinating. You know, throughout Endgame, I was thinking about this topic because Guido and I had talked about it a little bit before seeing Endgame. And thinking about all those previous films. You know, 2007, I believe, was when Iron Man came out. I just got out of high school. I was about to start college, and, you know, thinking about all the things I was concerned about, that I was excited for at that point. You know, no way I would have thought that I'd be I'd be a part of this awesome community with the Just Okay Gamers and have all these wonderful friends and people who would actually want to tune in and listen to me talk a lot of bullshit. And and that it blows my mind, you know, and just thinking about everything else from the years followed that were mentioned in Endgame, just think about how life progresses. And, you know, it's I think if there's one thing to even take from Endgame is, you know, we all change. Things start becoming more important, or things we have to just focus on more as either adults or teenagers or what have you. And sometimes it's not the easiest thing to do. And sometimes it's the thing, you know, that's the right thing to do for the situation you're in. And it's not the easiest thing, but it's the right thing. And I wish I could say it better than that, but I think it's just kind of how it goes.
I think everybody understands. Like, we made a bunch of awesome episodes of this movie podcast, and it's something to be super proud of. And I think we've both grown, and we've both kind of honed our speaking ability through this. And, man, it's been a pleasure doing this with you. It's been a pleasure talking about movies. And my goal this whole time, and for this movies podcast, was to get you and a bunch of other people to watch Old Dogs. And I fulfilled that way early on. So, mission accomplished.
God. Oh, man. That was a long con.
Yeah. It took a while.
It did. But, that took a little while.
It was great. We watched so many cool movies and not so cool movies, and always a blast to talk about them. And it goes to say that just the medium itself, cinema, would allow me and you and, you know, Wally and Millpool and Nasty to have this thing in common and meet up out of nowhere and create something out of nothing using their creativity as a building block. It goes to say something about this generation we live in. And boy, I'm happy that we've gone on this journey together. I've gotten to know a lot about you, Biggie, and I will always consider you a good friend.
Thank you, buddy. I don't know if I couldn't say it any better. Well, I've greatly appreciated being able to discuss all these topics with you, and I've definitely learned a lot more about film. You're just a wealth of knowledge about film. It blows my mind the stuff you can bring up. And you know, there's definitely a lot of movies we watched that I never would have unless it was for this pod and for you mentioning them. And I'm very grateful, and also consider to be a good friend as well. And I love you guys. I don't know if I could ever say that enough. And I'm always down for talking about films. You know, if you're not part of the group in the Just Okay Gamers Discord, please get on there. You know, every now and then there's some movie nights going on. And, you know, if you just want to mention, hey, let's have a movie night, I'm sure someone will oblige. You know, there's tons of people on there who like watching stuff as well, and it's fun to get in a group and talk. So it's just a great community on there. But ultimately, thank you all so much. Love you dearly. And I'm sure we'll be talking in the future. All right. See you later.
Bye-bye forever.